Welcome to Girls with Dogs, a podcast by two dear friends who bonded over their love of dogs and blogging. We used to have these chats each week, and now we record them for you. Thanks for joining us this week, and now on to the madness. Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome to another episode of Girls with Dogs. This is Kimberly, the blogger behind Keep the Tail Wagging, and I'm here with my dear, dear friend, Kathy, the blogger behind Groovy Golden Doodles, and we are Girls with Dogs. How you doing, Kathy? After dark. Anyway, how you doing, Kathy?
I'm okay. I'm just laughing at our guest because after we told her that we were not recording the video and you said, okay, we're going to start recording, she fixed her hair.
Yeah. You know,
and I said,
I gotta look good for y'all.
Maybe she doesn't believe us.
No, I have to look good for y'all.
And we appreciate you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I was looking at the thing and I said, oh my goodness, my hair's still, you know, in a bun.
I've had those moments. many of them.
It's a struggle for me too. Short hair doesn't always go in the direction you want it to go.
That's what's so funny about short hair is you think that, you know what, I'm just going to take it all off. And you feel like you're just going to be done. It's like going and getting a relaxer. It's like, I'm just going to get my hair relaxed. I don't have to deal with it. And it's like, no, you just entered a new room of problems that you have to deal with.
No, I think my biggest problem is which hat am I going to put on my head? And then I don't have anything I have to stuff up in it. So that's good. But welcome back, Dr. Craig.
Yes.
I'm glad to be back.
We are glad to have you. Two subjects we're going to talk about today, which I think are fairly appropriate. This is pet prevention poison or pet poison prevention.
Pet prevention poison is fine by me.
Oh, this is the month that you... This is the month that you pay attention and make sure your dog doesn't get into anything that's going to hurt, harm, or kill him.
I know. And if you have a puppy at home, and you puppy or an adolescent that's constantly trying to kill themselves, what is in your mouth now?
Yeah, it's a daily activity.
So anyway, for Pet Poison Prevention Month, Dr. Craig really wanted to talk about something that's become a big topic that we believe we need to talk about. But first, super excited to share a few things from one of our listeners. Mm-hmm. So a shout out to Roanne Del Greco, who actually said that she would love to hear Dr. Craig's feedback about flea, tick, and heartworm prevention. Natural preventatives versus conventional.
Oh my.
What?
You swatted something.
Something is flying in my face. So she recently adopted a dog from a shelter and he's been coming back to the shelter with her, you know, to kind of project this good role model for other dogs. She's always shied away from chemical preventatives. But having a dog in the shelter setting, it's kind of making her rethink this due to the fact that, you know, some dogs come that he comes in contact with may or may not, you know, have already had their doses or may still be carrying something, especially if they were out, you know, in the street for a while. So she thought with Jackson working in a hospital and talking and listening, you know, to us talk, that he might be on a preventative too. And she wanted to get just some conventional perspectives. Then we've got Kimberly, who is out in the Pacific Northwest, who takes a more holistic approach because
options. Fortunate to be able to do that.
Because of where she is. So I think we've got an urban chemical, a Northwestern holistic, and then a veterinarian that can kind of speak to some of the concerns and questions that Roanne may have, as well as anybody else that's listening. So I open up the floor.
Okay. So there are a lot of products that prevent against fleas and ticks. And there are also products that prevent against mosquitoes. So I can talk about the chemical ones, which prevent against fleas and ticks only. And an example of that would be Advantix. So that's going to be your Western medicine, where you part the hair, and it's a topical, and you give it once a month. So that's a dosing that's given once a month. It does nothing for heartworms, which I actually went to a elementary school and talked about heartworms today. Anyway, so for heartworms, I would also recommend this other product. It's a pill that's given that prevents against fleas, ticks, heartworms, as well as roundworms and hookworms. There are some other products out there. There's a wonderful product out there that you give once every 3 months, and it stays in the system for those 3 months, though. But for individuals that forget to give the various products, that's probably the one they want to go with. And then there's another one that in cats also prevents against tapeworms. The flea is the thing that delivers tapeworms, okay?
I remember.
Yeah, so that one actually squashes that intestinal parasite as well. And I'm going to pass the baton to the Pacific Northwest the holistic piece.
Well, as it so happens, I have some stuff over there because I did a video this weekend after someone slapped my hand in a dog lover group because of what I do for flea and tick prevention. So one thing I always like to tell people is I'm not telling anybody what they should do. I'm just sharing what I do and what works for me. And one thing are essential oils. I'm very big on essential oils. However, I think essential oils can be extremely dangerous if you are don't know what you're doing, if you are getting them from a source that's not reputable, like do not buy them at the grocery store. Walmart does not have good essential oils. The essential oils I use for my dogs were formulated by a holistic veterinarian, so I feel comfortable using those. But even with her essential oils, I will actually put them on myself first because some oils can burn, like they're hot. So I don't want to cause my dogs any discomfort. So I'm just very careful. But she has three oils, Away, Oust, and Evict. And all of these serve to repel biting insects. So I just take three drops along their back. I start at their tail and work it, you know, the tail, the middle, the back, the neck, and let them go. As they move, the oils will move around their body. And I do that a couple times a week. There's also natural flea and tick sprays. Those also have essential oils, but they're not going to be as much. And by the way, when I say using essential oils from, it's Dr. Melissa Shelton of Animalio, I only use the diluted essential oils. I would not use anything that's neat because that's just too strong. And I honestly think that you really need to know how to work the dilutions. There's dilution charts out there, but I've come to the point where I don't trust anything anymore because everyone has a different opinion on what you're supposed to do. So I go for the safest option possible. But there are sprays, there's Wonderside, there's Cedarside. The one that I like the most is called Kin and Kine. There's a company called Project Suds. They make a flea and tick spray, and most of them have cedar or lavender oil or rosemary. What is there? Not lemon verbena, but something similar to that scent where they're the plants themselves are known to repel fleas and ticks. And you just basically spray your dog before you go for a walk or you let him outside. And with those, you have to spray your dog more often because since it's not like a topical thing that's going to cover their body and stay, these can easily get worn off, washed off. So you do have to spray your dog And for people who live in a high infested area, an area where I say the fleas have, you know, they look at essential oils and such and laugh. You know, these type of things just aren't going to work for them. I hear from people all the time. And there, I'm not going to say it's a myth. There is a belief that if you feed your dogs a raw food diet, your dogs will not get fleas. The reason why people say this is because they say that fleas prefer animals that are fed a high carb diet. The problem is that I think, as with every other animal, insect, everyone is opportunistic. And so if you have fleas on your property and your dogs are raw fed and that's what they have access to, then they're not going to turn down a meal. And I know plenty of people who feed raw who have flea infestations. So it is not a guarantee that just changing your dog's diet is going to decrease the fleas. It's one of those things where, especially when you're doing it naturally, you're going to have to do a lot of different things to make sure that the fleas stay at bay. The third thing I do is I add garlic to my dog's diet. And I know that there is a study from years ago that people often reference that says garlic is toxic to dogs. That study has been debunked. Garlic is safe and has benefits for healthy adult dogs. I would not give it to a young puppy. Some people say like 8 weeks or younger. I am of the 6 months and younger. You don't get garlic. I would not give it to a pregnant dog. I would not give it to a dog that had an anemic condition. So I stick with a healthy dog. And I have a product that's called, I don't want to do regular garlic because the steps you have to do, you have to like crush it and then let it sit for 20 minutes and then you mix it in. I don't have time for all that. There are supplements out there. My favorite one is by Springtime Supplements. It's called Bug Off. I buy the big container of it because it lasts forever. And I don't even give my dogs the recommended dosage that's on the container. I give each of my dogs a teaspoon in their meals a few times a week, starting in the spring and going through the fall. And that helps them. They're, you know, I guess it's coming out of their pores and the fleas don't like that. But I have been, knock on wood, flea free for over a decade doing these things.
That is excellent. And yes, in the Pacific Northwest, you might be able to get away with that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just it, is I have people asking me all the time. And every single time I have this conversation, it's someone from like Florida or a humid state. So and usually a heartworm positive state. They will come back and go, yeah, I've tried all of those things. People try to be as natural as possible. And I get it. And it's just sort of, in my opinion, if you have to use chemical treatments or medication, you know, like if I were put in a position where that was a requirement, if everything shifted where I am, because we're not a heartworm positive state, but if we became one, if this is the year where the fleas all of a sudden became super fleas and they weren't scared away by my little essential oils, I would use topical treatments. But I would also start adding like milk thistle and other supplements that will support their liver health so that they are properly filtering out those chemicals in the body. I mean, we're all going to do the best that we can. I know that I'm stuttering. It really makes me sad to see on social media people being told never to use these chemicals and told, you know, well, there's going to cause your dog seizures. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. I think with everything, there is going to be some risk, but I think that there are some products that are safer than others. I think, honestly, while, you know, and this has changed over the years, I think social media is an excellent place to get some really good information, but gather that information and walk into your vet's office and have a conversation with them. Because like, just even with me talking about essential oils, and because I am, it's a specific brand. I'm not saying all essential oils, a specific brand is the only thing I will use on my dogs. And if they went out of business, I would not use essential oils on my dogs ever again. It's as simple as that. But there are so many things that I can't possibly know as a layman that your veterinarian may know that they can tell you, no, you don't want to put this garlic supplement in your dog's diet because your dog has A, B, and C and it'll make it worse. So it's definitely.
So yeah, I talked to, so when I lived in Virginia, I used Wondicide and that was just wonderful. When I moved to Charleston, I realized that flea ticks are the state bird. Okay. They actually have a flag. This is exactly, you know, where I'm living. Now I've never had a flea nor a tick. I don't even know what they look like to say I've pulled one off of my dog. And I'm being very honest.
And that's a good thing.
And so when I first got here and I was interviewing veterinarians, and yes, I did interview quite a few, some clinics I'm not allowed back into. But, you know, the whole concept was we really don't care what you use. We do have our preferences, but down here, darling, you're going to use something. And so unlike Kimberly, I don't have the luxury of being able to do. I do remember that the veterinarians that I work with currently were not fans of the topical where you split. And I went through that and the big warning, don't let it get on your hands. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first time I did, I watched my fingers because I didn't know what was going to happen to them. But so I use a flea and tick commercial grade chew and also a heartworm chew because I'm in that particular region. So I don't have a lot of options and I don't have a lot of luxuries. You know, Kimberly, when it comes to social media, I'm very, very happy that I am the type of person that I can read and decipher and then place information in various buckets. But again, like you said, if social media and the groups that you belong to or the people that you follow, you trust, I think that's great for getting information. However, you always have to go back. Kimberly has helped me with a boatload of things that she does for her dogs. And she's saying, you know, this is what I'm doing. And I listen and I smile. But before I test it, I call my vet.
Yeah, and
it has nothing to do with not trusting Kimberly. She's giving me a gateway to an alternative. Now I have to figure out, is that alternative good for my dog? Mm-hmm. So Rowan, I think that I don't know where you live. I think you have to figure out what your region is. Take a look at your state bird on Google. If it looks like a flea tick, then you're just like me. If you're out in the Northwest.
For some reason, I feel like she lives in Oregon.
If you live out where there are not a lot, I would recommend that you. Everybody may not know to do this. I am truly enjoying having the benefit of both sides. I have a Western doodle dock and I have a Eastern doodle dock. And I love the collaboration between the two. I love the fact that everything the holistic people tell me, the Western person is not necessarily that much in favor, but she'll break it down and let me know in addition to what I should do. And I run back and the holistic vet says, you know, and that's good. And that's good. You should do it. So I love the collaboration of having the two. And so far that's worked out really well for us. But yeah, Rowan, if you are listening when this thing does air, please let us know what you decided to do because we're nosy like that.
We kind of want to know.
So, all right, pivot. We're going to pivot. Pet.
Okay. Poison. Oh, what? Can I interject just one thing? Okay. So you did mention about seizures of some dogs having that. Those dogs typically are in what's known as the sight hound category. Mm-hmm. So they have wonderful, beautiful, deep chests, and they have a narrow waist, and they run like gazelles. So those are typically, and they have long noses, those are typically the sight hounds. So those are the ones that you need to be very careful with what product you're using. Okay, and I just wanted to put that out there.
This is why she's here. And this is why it drives me bonkers when I see people on social media promoting the message of not talking to your veterinarian. Because not only did I not know that, it would never have even occurred to me to Google that. Because I would, where would my head be? And since I have mixed breed dogs, everything I think of is just on a mixed breed scale. So exactly. It's just one of those, you know, you just, and it's when you're having these conversations, your veterinarian will pop up with a little factoid like that. And it's like, I did not know this. So don't cut them out of the conversation.
Okay, we can pivot now.
Are we sure? Is everybody ready to pivot?
Yes.
I don't know. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
My drink is so good. I mean, I nailed it today.
Oh, what do you have?
Moonshine and what?
It's a tea. Costco has this tea and it's in a jar and it looks like jam. And what it is, it's lemon peels orange peels and orange, ginger and something else. It's over there. I'm too lazy to get up and go get it. But you just take a spoonful, put it in your mug, add hot water, stir it around, and you got tea. And I love it. I love it. I've always seen it. Always wanted to try it. I finally tried it. And now it's my jam.
It's your thing.
Okay. And so I added my moonshine tonight and I added just the right amount.
I knew that was coming.
This is hitting.
I knew the moonshine was coming. What are you drinking, Dr. Craig?
A big old mug full of alcohol.
Water. No, it is just water and ice. Water and ice. I'm on my new health kick, so I'm drinking water and ice.
Don't you love those mugs?
I do. And I got this at a meeting. It was a giveaway. And I said, let me try this thing out. Come to find out, it's one of those, it's a brand a name, Stanley. Stanley. Who knew? I am not a brand name gal.
Better put your name on that before someone tries to snatch you.
That's right.
I have two Stanley knockoffs and I never cared because they're big and awkward and stuff. But you know, that 40 ounce, you can go through that water, two of those a day with no problem.
Uh-huh. A lot of visits to the bathroom though.
Yes. You drop it for a couple hours, come back to it. Water's still cold. I love it. Those things are brilliant.
Yeah. It's
what
wonderful.
What are you drinking, Kathy? Wine?
I'm drinking wine in a glass. It's not water. It's not Stanley. It's not tea. It's not hot. But it keeps me happy. Okay?
Uh-huh. And you're still special. You're still special.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. But I'm just sitting here waiting for whenever the hell y'all are ready to pivot.
We're pivoting.
You know, people don't realize I'm not really trying to be the mean person on the podcast all the time. I'm supposed to be the timekeeper.
Yes,
and it would help if the people that are with me would just pay attention.
Cooperate.
To the time. Yes, Jesus. Be offense.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so I know you all are waiting, but now we're going to talk about Pet Poison Prevention Month, which is almost over. I hope
yes,
you know.
Yes, it is.
I hope you know. So one of the things, though, I think before you get into talking about what you are so excited to talk about, Suzanne, can you give us a brief overview or rundown of what we're supposed to do when we recognize and realize that our pet has consumed something that could become lethal and very dangerous? What is it that we're supposed to do? What's the first thing besides scream? Then after we scream, what do we do?
Okay, so first thing is don't wait. Call the emergency vet. Tell them what they ingested and how much they ingested and how long ago they ingested it. Do not wait for clinical signs to appear. That is a problem. That means basically when I get a call and they're telling me, oh, he's lethargic. Okay, so here's one. We live near a beach. This dog consumed quite a bit of salt water. That's poisonous. I got the call after the dog was exhibiting clinical signs. And I basically had to say, you know, you have to go past my clinic and actually go to the emergency room. If you had called me when, I didn't say this part.
Yeah.
If you had called me before the clinical signs appeared, we might could have helped you. But yeah. Clinical signs start appearing, lethargy, vomiting, diarrhea, those type of things. Basically, it's time to go to the emergency clinic. The charcoal's not going to help, and causing vomiting or emesis is not going to help.
Yeah, that's the thing that people jump to. Oh, I'm going to give my dog some, what is it, hydrogen peroxide and make him vomit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, this goes back to social media. I mean,
No. Because Jackson ate a sock. And
what?
I called Jackson ate a sock when he was a puppy, and I called Doodle Doc, and I was like, ah! And so she said, how long ago did he eat it? I said, 2 minutes ago. She said, okay, you got about 18 minutes to get him some peroxide. I said, how do I do that? She said, do you have an eyedropper? And I was like, oh yeah, right next to the salt and pepper shaker. So she said,
your sarcasm is not appreciated.
So she said, put 2 teaspoons in a Ziploc bag and hold it tight like an ice cream, like you're getting ready to ice a cookie. She said, cut the top and squirt it in his mouth. So I did it. And he just looked at me and shook his head and went on to play. I called her back and I was like, ah. So she said, okay. She said, do it again. 2 teaspoons in the thing, squirted it. And then he looked at me and he went like this and he went like that. And up it came. So then I was just felt like I was a doctor.
Uh-huh.
So when I talked to her again, she said, there are certain things that dogs can swallow, and you have 20 minutes before it goes all the way through the intestinal tract into the stomach. Mm-hmm. And if you can get your dog to take not a lot, 1 to 2 teaspoons based on weight and age, it will force them to vomit. So it is not a social media thing, but I don't think it works for everything.
It is a social media thing, because listen to how you told that story. How many people on social media are going to say?
No, when I said a social media thing, I'm thinking
like they came up with it.
It's not a myth.
No. Well, no, I mean that it's one of those things where I see people on social media giving this advice. And when you think about when the person left the comment and you're coming in 20 minutes later saying, hey, do this. It's like, no, you should be saying, if your dog is still sick, you need to go to the emergency vet right now.
Exactly.
But people will give that advice. Cause you know, I learned about that trick when Rodrigo swallowed one of those squeakers from a toy.
Okay.
And when they came up, turned out he had swallowed six. He had six in his gut.
Six,
and that we didn't know. And from there, we just stopped buying squeaker toys.
How old was he?
3 or 4.
Oh, he's too old to be doing that.
He did it. Yes. He might have been younger. He is like 2 to 3, maybe. But those are the type of things that. I know everyone means well, but what the both of you guys shared about, you know, if the symptoms are there, that's the part of the conversation that we don't get on social media.
So one of the things though, and I'm going to ask Suzanne, would this work? So we have sago palms, and sago palms have nuts that have this called a bohi flesh inside the nut. And these are absolutely lethal if they are ingested. I mean, I'm talking about you can go to the park and he can eat one and then you walk two blocks and that's it. So in this case, when you have something like that, can you use, when can you do anything to start the vomiting process as you dial the phone for the vet, or you should not do anything on your own and call the vet first?
Call the vet first, because there are some substances that you do not want them to vomit back up.
Okay.
And I'd have to look it up.
Like the toxicity?
Yes.
Like the toxicity from, I know you're not supposed to do it with, what is it that's, you would use this, Kimberly, in your car. We don't. Because we don't have cold weather. What is it? Antifreeze.
Antifreeze.
Right.
So there's something about antifreeze that dogs like the smell or the taste.
Oh, it's
so
sweet.
It's sweet.
Okay. Y'all make it sound like y'all sip some. Both of y'all said, oh, it's sweet. It's sweet. Jeez. Who am I talking to? But God, I lost my train of thought. Go to commercial. No, so that is something that you don't want them to regurgitate back up, because it also then tears up the esophagus and some other things.
Yeah. So, Sago Palm, you can have them vomit that back up. But there are some where you do not want them vomiting it back up. And that's when you do the activated charcoal. Once again, bring them into the vet for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sorry. Calling me stupid. What's the charcoal for?
It absorbs the toxin. Yes. It absorbs the toxin.
Yep. I have that in my first aid kit.
Oh, she has one now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. You got your travel kit.
I haven't
too?
Had any, you know, where they've gotten anything toxic, but if I have a dog that is vomiting, but otherwise okay, I have given activated charcoal. I'm still calling the vet and everything, but just to, like, if there's something in the system, I wanted it soaking it up and stuff. And so that's why I've only had to use it like once or twice in the past decade.
And the dog is supposed to want to eat charcoal?
No.
Oh, no, no, no.
They don't want to eat it. No.
Okay. Like with my dogs, I mean, what I've done, because it comes in a capsule. So I just basically take a couple capsules, put it at the back of their throat, rub their throat, and let it go down.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking like the kind that goes in the grill. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's not activated charcoal.
Listen.
Or you can just make it wet into a paste and put it in the back of their throat.
Yeah, I can see somebody getting confused on social media. They see charcoal and they think everything's activated charcoal. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Just don't get to what, you know, they'll be looking for the one that doesn't have the fuel.
And there's the other charcoal where they... I can't remember what it's called, but they basically what they put on food to let people know it's not for human consumption.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know.
But okay. There's a name for it. But I'm sure if Brian is listening, he knows it, because he works for a raw food company and he's all dialed into this. So I can imagine him going, Kimberly, it's da 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 da. But
anyway. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So call the vet now. Yeah. What if you can't reach your vet? Just go to any emergency vet?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Call them. There's a thing called Tox Buddy. I think individuals that are not vets can subscribe to it, and that you can actually put in the information yourself on what they consumed.
Is it an app?
I used to have a pet poison app. That did the same thing.
Now, it does have a price. It does have a cost to it, but it's very low.
No, mine's free.
Okay.
I do believe. And that's if I kept it. You know how sometimes you're bored. So you're like, let me get rid of these apps that I don't use anymore.
But yeah, I went ahead and subscribed to ToxBuddy.
Really?
And somebody can see it. What?
Is it because it's for Apple only? You know, you app companies that don't like to make stuff for Android are rude. I found ToxiPets.
Just trying to get you to come over to the other side, baby.
Not going to do it.
No. All right.
Yes, us.toxbuddy.com.
Oh, okay.
All right, we'll have to put that in the, whatchamacallit.
Yes, the show notes.
Oh, that's what you're calling them now?
Uh-huh. That's what other people call them.
ToxBuddy. Yeah. So that's just one.
Poison.
Yeah.
There it goes. Okay, so.
Oh, it says it.
No, I didn't name the brands of flea and tick preventive that I use or recommend, but.
Please do.
Oh, please do? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Is that okay? Because I know that you pivoted to poisons.
Oh, yeah. We got to check with Kathy.
Yeah, check with the time manager.
You know, this is why I drink wine, because y'all are so cute. Like, if I said no, you were going to listen.
Well, I just don't want to be yelled
just
at.
Go here. Ahead. Go, listen, it's not my show. It is not my show. I'm just kind of like on here.
Okay. So as far as brands, I do like Simparica Trio. That's one of my favorites. I also like Advantix, but that only does fleas and ticks. It does not do heartworm prevention. And then there's another product called NexGard, and the 3-month product is Prevecto.
Very nice. So let's talk about xylitol.
Yes, let's. I'm excited.
So I know that xylitol, there was, you know, this is several years ago. People were talking about stop giving your dog peanut butter because it has xylitol in and it's going to kill your dog. So we all had to start looking around for peanut butter that didn't have xylitol. And I was actually surprised because I had a hard time finding peanut butter that had xylitol in it. So.
Yep. So some of those sugar-free peanut butter do have xylitol in them.
Oh, that's what I wasn't looking for sugar-free.
Yeah, so xylitol is the thing in chewing gum that makes it sweet. And, you know, the dog sees you chewing it and says, wow, that looks so nice, them chewing. I want to chew too. So they go and grab it and they chew it up and then they get sick.
Yeah, that's a conversation Johan and I always have about him dropping little old packages of gum, like it got caught up in his pocket and he put it through the laundry didn't notice, and as he's taking laundry out, it's sitting on the floor in the laundry room.
Yeah probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
so there's a group that is asking for specific labeling that says that xylitol should only be used in human foods, should not be shared with your pet, and to make sure that xylitol, if it is an ingredient, is prominently labeled on the package.
Yes.
So that is one of the things that's happening. It's just there's been a more and more cases of xylitol poisoning in pets. And one of the issues is there's more and more products with xylitol in it.
So I'm going to tell y'all about Moose. So Moose is a therapy dog that there was a article written on him because he ended up becoming the Christmas miracle. Moose's family had all come down for the holidays. Everybody put their gifts under the tree and the family humans had left and Moose was in the house alone. And Moose is like at that point, like a 5 or 6 year old chocolate lab, probably weighing in about 85, 87 pounds. And there was a package that had come in the mail that went under the tree, and it was for one of the children. And in it was a lot of different types of candies and stuff. But Moose decided that he was going to eat the gum. And 3 days later, $8,000 later, Moose came home on Christmas Eve. And it was just the luck of Moose's size. And I guess the duration of time where he wasn't, you know, he had consumed the gum that saved his life. And that's when I was like, okay, no gum in my house. You can't have gum in my house. Keep it in your car. Or in your mouth. You can't have packs of gum because we get so careless with it. You know, we want to put it on the dresser or in a, like guests leave it in their suitcase and the suitcase is open on the floor. But didn't you tell me, Suzanne, that people were thinking about putting the warning labels on the products?
Yes. Yeah, there's actually a bipartisan bill called the Pause Off Act, and they are trying to make sure that things are better labeled.
Now, what is the difference between natural xylitol?
I don't think it's a natural product.
Xylitol is found naturally in fruits and vegetables like strawberries, raspberries, mushrooms, and cauliflower.
That's what they're saying? I thought that was fructose.
Fruits are rich in xylitol.
I don't think that's an issue for dogs or cats.
Okay.
Fruits. In fact, let me see if I can find this thing. Okay. So foods that can be shared with your pet.
Oh.
Apples, bananas, blueberries, broccoli, carrots, cauliflower, cheese. Mm-hmm. Popcorn, strawberries, and xylitol-free peanut butter.
Now, I'm going to pivot.
Oh,
I'm going to pivot though. Haha. Because
where are we going?
I had a conversation with a therapy handler today.
Okay.
And her husband, when he was volunteering, he would always go to the ICU unit at the end of their shift, and get the little small Jif peanut butter cups that you see in the hospital that go on the tray. It's about the equivalent of 2 tablespoons.
Okay.
And so I said to her, are you going to go upstairs and get some peanut butter for Delilah before you leave? And she was like, oh, no. And so then she said, we can't give. Now, remember, I have representation from multiple therapy organizations. And she was saying that it was against the rules to give a dog peanut butter, a therapy dog peanut butter, because a patient could have a peanut butter allergy.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we got into a huge conversation, and I love, you know, having this kind of dialogue. It wasn't, you know, we weren't battling or anything.
Yeah.
I said, but I'm telling you to get the peanut butter on your way out when you
correct.
Leave. And so she said, I don't even give them peanut butter treats. And I said, well, if you gave Delilah peanut butter today and she's not going to see anybody for another 2 or 3 days. And so she said, there are people who have peanut allergies where they can't even inhale it. Mm-hmm. Off of somebody's breath or pause. That got me wondering. Never seen that written in any of the therapy organization handbooks. But she does have a point. So many people gravitate to commercial treats. I'm one of them that consists of peanut butter.
But keep in mind, if I ate peanut butter and then visited a patient, it is unlikely that they would have a peanut butter reaction.
Really?
Yeah.
So hold that thought, because that was my rebuttal in this debate.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was like, it's just like when schools don't allow you to bring peanut butter products in the classroom, because you can have 28 students, 27 of them eat it, and the 28th who's allergic goes into some kind of a peanut butter allergy coma. You know, and that's why they say no peanut butter products. You can't bring cookies or sandwiches or crackers or anything like that. So that doesn't exactly jive with what you just said.
But I
sure
thought
it does. They're kids.
Yeah, I thought that rule was because the kid would still eat it. Because it's like if there's cookies sitting out there,
No.
But that's what I'm not saying, like, from her perspective, but I think from the school's perspective, because I have heard from people who work in the schools, you can have a kid who either, even though they know they're not supposed to have peanut butter, they're going to try it, or they just don't know that this product right here has peanut butter. So they've just made the decision, so we can just avoid any accidents happening, we're just going to take all peanut butter out so we don't have to even worry about it.
And keep in mind, we're a lawsuit country.
But they talk about
their liability.
Serious accidental exposure. Not consumption, exposure is the reason why.
There's probably 1% of the U.S. where just being near it will cause you to go off. Normally, it has to be ingestion.
Yeah, I have heard of peanut, like people who are so allergic that peanut dust. So people around them, like they can't go to baseball games because people cracking the peanuts and having that peanut dust in the air, if it blows towards them, they'll have a reaction. I have heard of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But those are very far and few between for those things to happen. And who knows why little Joey is having an issue? It may have nothing to do with peanut butter, but that parent might sue the school district for not even talking about it.
It's just, hey, it's just, that was my pivot.
But okay. Yeah.
It was a good pivot.
That was my pivot. Uh-huh. Because I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. Clinicians have treats at the unit desk for the dogs. I doubt seriously if it's on sale, they're not looking to see that it's got peanut butter in it. So
right.
I'd never heard of that. So that's very interesting. But so the natural xylitol is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So of course there's a list of common things around the house. And garlic is actually on that list.
Yes, it will. I think it will always be on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing about it is, I think that, you know, it's funny because people will ask, you know, like, well, why do they have these lists where, you know, avocado's on the list?
Yeah.
And it's the seed and the leaves. You know, it's not the meat of the
fruit.
Avocado.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, you know, you're always going to have that one person that's just, you know, where like with, you know, when you think about garlic and the fact that garlic, you, whenever I talk about garlic, I have to put out those caveats, not for puppies, not for pregnant dogs, not for dogs with an anemic condition. There could be other conditions too, that I just don't know of, that they should not be fed. That's why it has to be a healthy dog. And I think at some point in time, people just get tired of breaking it down because they just don't trust that. You know, by the time the message gets out to everyone, it's either garlic is toxic or garlic is fine. Give them all they want. And, and someone has harmed their dog. So I hate it.
I've always associated xylitol as being the sugar-free sweetener ingredient.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's how I've always associated it. Now, looking at this list, thanks to my man, Greg, I had no idea about mouthwash, oral rinses, and toothpaste.
Yeah, and they need to taste good.
And nasal sprays.
Hmm.
Interesting.
And the natural xylitol, I'm curious if it really is xylitol, because you know how sometimes they come up with these chemicals and it's sort of like a derivative of something. So it may start as something in strawberries, for example, but by the time they get their hands on it and monkey around with it in a lab, it becomes xylitol. So,
well, what they're using is to take whatever the natural xylitol is in the strawberries or the blueberries, they're taking it and then they're creating a xylitol alcohol, which is what they're putting in the gum and the toothpaste and the mouthwash.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, that you're correct in that regard. They've tampered with it, and to tamper with it to make it profitable for human consumption based on what they're promoting the product in terms of, you know, no calories, I think that that's what's become harmful to the pet.
So. And that xylitol actually is extracted from corn fiber.
Yes.
And birch tree. So it's not exactly the same as the strawberry, plums, oats, mm-hmm. mushrooms, whatever, that it's already in naturally.
I mean, isn't it funny that strawberry candy doesn't taste like strawberries? Blueberry candy doesn't taste like blueberries. That should just tell us that right there. It's like, it's not what blueberries taste like.
It depends on how much you've had to drink.
Oh.
Infused blueberries.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Just saying.
One day we're going to all get together and we're going to have some infused blueberries.
Yes, I'm loving the fact that one day we'll be able to do that. We'll have to get Kimberly to come out here.
I know.
I need to bring her out here in the dead of the summer and just sit in the sun. Just sit her in the sun and watch her suffer.
She'll be melting.
As I'm melting. It was 75 degrees this weekend, and I was just like, oh, this is too much. I can't. Oh, I can't.
And then we'll make her a spot of tea with a little moonshine.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'll be great. Well, all right. Listen, ladies, this has been great, but our time is up.
All right. It was Suzanne, wonderful talking
we'll
to you guys.
Definitely have you back next month because you've become a monthly regular.
So oh, I'm excited.
If you're listening and you have questions that you want Dr. Craig to answer, just go ahead and hit us up either in the comment section or send us an email. Love to hear from you.
Yes, indeed.
Good night, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.